This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott.
Astrology is a primitive belief system made into elaborate pseudoscience. It arrogantly makes humans the focal point of the universe. The movement of planets is supposed to signify petty developments in our career or love life.
That's evolutionary biologist Richard Dawkins from the documentary Enemies of Reason. While some cast a skeptical eye on astrology, a 2013 Harris poll revealed that 29% of Americans have faith in astrological readings, and that number may be rising. But why? Journalist Amanda Petrusich wrote about its growing popularity for BuzzFeed and asked the question, is it time for us to take astrology more seriously? Amanda Petrusich, great to have you back on Word of Mouth.
Thanks so much, Virginia. I'm glad to be here.
So first, I think I have to ask, what's your sign?
I am a Capricorn. I was born on January 6th.
Well, that's good to get out of the way. Now on to your article, which it says that a report from the National Science Foundation, this was published earlier this year, found that in 2012, about half of Americans said astrology was not at all scientific. Now, in 2013, two-thirds said it was not at all scientific. Pretty significant jump. Let's tease this apart. First, any ideas on why it's growing?
Sure. Well, one of the things I had a chance to investigate a little bit in the article is the role technology has played in the growth in astrology's popularity. I mean, people have always been interested in traditions that purport to offer some kind of actionable information about the future. But I think the web has really accelerated the popularity of astrology, in particular in two ways, the first being that it's made astrology, like everything else, more accessible and more interactive and customizable. And the second, which is the sort of more interesting idea, I think, has to do with a larger cultural shift. It makes sense that people who sort of came of age with this kind of access to information would feel like they deserve to know what's going to happen to them next week, and that's what astrology ultimately sells. And right now we're in this sort of unusual moment where veracity is almost a declining currency. We don't care so much that it's true as long as we have some information.
Well, how about what's going on politically and economically? You know, there's a lot of uncertainty, and I'm wondering if you found historical precedents for rise in astrology when life just feels unsure.
Right. It's really interesting. I mean, I would imagine it's tough to get kind of hard numbers on those things because they tend to be, you know, our sort of own personal crises tend to be undocumented. But there's certainly evidence of astrology, or at least a very nascent practice of astrology as early as 700 BC, when it wasn't considered a low art, but a very vital one. And it was, you know, always a sort of interpretive practice from the beginning, and this continued through the 17th century in Kepler, who's considered the forefather of astronomy, but was also an ardent believer in astrology. And I think we have seen sort of, people turning to this in moments of crisis. There were many, early modern European courts would have an astrologer, you know, on call to help juries reach verdicts. And certainly I think people find themselves turning to astrology or turning to other sort of forms of mysticism when they're confused. You know, mm-hmm. It functions, I would imagine, probably pretty similarly to religion.
I want to get to a point that you just brought up, which was a real revelation for me, that up until the late 17th century, astrology and astronomy remained what you call close bedfellows. But here we are. We're in the 21st century, you know, Big Bang Theory, widely accepted. Scientists worth their salt wouldn't even bother to study astrology, would they?
No. No, certainly. And I think as an actual predictive tool, astrology can be very quickly and handily debunked. And in the course of reporting this story, I spoke with a physicist named Eugene Tracy, who teaches at the College of William and Mary, and he very quickly and kind of patiently explained to me that this, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. We sort of know better than this now, that the gravitational pull of the stars is no stronger than the gravitational pull of the person sitting next to you. But interestingly, even as a social science, astrology really hasn't held up. In the 80s, there's a study that I cite in my story of a UC Berkeley physicist named Sean Carlson, who tasked, I think it was 28 astrologers, with pairing 100 natal charts to various psychological profiles. And psychology just failed to perform at a level better than chance. And that study ended up being published in Nature in 1985. And that was the last kind of real instance, I think, of science sort of approaching this and saying, all right, well, you know, could this possibly be true? And sort of coming away and saying, no, it's just not working.
I should point out that, you know, as I was reading your article and you had links to different astrology sites, I went to each one of them. I mean, there's something comforting that we're seeking, or some sort of sense of positivity and direction.
So I do have this knee-jerk response in some ways, but the serious followers of astrology have long flowing hair or, you know, ponytails and wear crystals. What does the 2014 client look like, Amanda?
Right. It's so interesting because I sort of felt similarly about it. And then I found myself kind of anecdotally seeing a resurgence of interest in the practice, and especially among well-educated, successful, you know, urban-dwelling professionals, among some of my undergraduate students at NYU, and especially among women. And there was a way that these women were sort of wielding astrology, online especially, in an almost confrontational way. They were almost kind of challenging someone to decry it. Hmm. There was this sort of aggressive edge to the way they refused to acknowledge that, oh, it might be sort of embarrassing to believe in this. Which I thought was really interesting. But, you know, I mean, astrology aside from just being kind of fun, there's something really appealing about reading your profile, you know, the profile of your sign, which is largely positive for the most part, and almost using it as a roadmap in a way, almost saying, okay, well, this is what the heavens is telling me I should be like, so I'll be this person. This, you know, here's an identity for me. I think that's surprisingly appealing to people.
I'm speaking with Amanda Petrusich about the rising popularity of astrology, especially in recent years. Interesting, because in our data-driven era, there's absolutely no evidence, scientific or social science-based, that astrology actually works, but yet people are turning to it over and over again. And that's a question. Has the clientele changed over the years, or are people a little more open about believing in astrology now?
That's also a great question. I think historically it has been traditionally sort of the terrain of women, or we presumed it's women. I did spend some time with the astrologer Susan Miller, who runs a website called Astrology Zone, and she insisted that that's not true, that it's not all women, that many of her readers are men, you know, a far higher percentage than most people would presume. You know, it's tough, though. It's tough to get hard numbers. It's tough to get good data on that because people don't want to admit the extent to which they are, you know, using astrology to make decisions about their lives.
Well, you had your natal chart done at a Brooklyn bookstore, if I'm remembering correctly, but you also had it done with Susan Miller, this woman who's quite a famous astrologer and charges a lot of money. Can you just walk us through that a little bit? You know, how long it took, how much it cost, whether you felt like she was getting it right when this, you know, behind the curtain at a card table guy was not?
Sure. Susan actually doesn't do private readings anymore because she was being, I think, sort of inundated with requests. So she will do them, you know, in sort of special circumstances. She agreed to do one with me so I could get a sense of how she operated. But she ended up being so popular that it just didn't make sense for her, you know, time-wise to continue doing private readings. But yes, we were having lunch at a restaurant in Midtown, and she pulled out her laptop. It's all done on computers now. She has a special program that in which she can kind of plug in the precise time and location of my birth, and then pulls up a chart. I mean, in the chart, to me, it's a pie chart that just sort of looks like a lot of nonsense. I couldn't kind of make head or tails of it. But she would explain to me sort of where all of the planets were at the moment of my birth, and sort of how their placement in the sky affects my character, which is a really, you know, strange and fascinating thing to have a stranger do for you.
Did you find yourself falling victim to confirmation bias, thinking, oh, yeah, I can be like that sometimes?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, completely. I mean, there's something really satisfying about sitting down with someone and then, you know, saying to you, well, this is who you are, you know, and this is what's going to happen to you, and this is how you behave, and this is why. Yes, of course, you start to hear those things, and you think, like, yeah, of course, yes, that's me. That sounds just like me. And that, I think, historically has been one of the things that gets people really riled up about astrology, is this sort of insistence that, they're just telling you what you want to hear, or they're just telling you things that you already know, or they're just telling you things that are aspirational, that you want to believe are true about yourself. And I certainly found myself, you know, falling prey to all of those things. It's very, very intoxicating, I think, to sit there while someone, you know, tells you how successful you're going to be.
Well, yeah, you're talking about a deep human craving. So I'm just wondering, Amanda, after going through this, you know, are you finding yourself consulting the pages? Or are you going online to read your horoscope more these days?
You know, I will read it every once in a while, but I think if anything, the course of reporting the story probably made me even a little bit more skeptical of how, you you know, how much good it can really do for me. But that being said, I feel like for the most part, it's a fairly harmless pastime. It's relatively low stakes. I realize, like anything, there are people who maybe would get a little too invested and end up spending their fortunes on getting their natal charts right over and over again. But I think for most people, it doesn't function that way. And it ends up being a kind of frivolous and fun thing.
Amanda Petrusich, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Virginia.
You'll find a link to read Amanda's article for BuzzFeed called Is It Time for Us to Take Astrology Seriously? The link is at wordofmouthradio.org. This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. Age of Aquarius. Aquarius. I'm Virginia Prescott, and today Word of Mouth is looking for answers. From motivational speakers and self-help gurus to astrologers and clairvoyants, we're visiting places that Americans go to untangle life's mysteries. Comedian David Cross played that for laughs. He claims he has a mystical ability that provides him insight into a great unknown, the human soul.
Whenever someone dies, there are at least a couple people at the funeral who say something like, "Oh, I don't feel like I ever knew him at all," or "Her life was a mystery to me." Well, I feel bad for these people because they don't have what I have. They can't do what I can do, which is to know everything about a person just by smelling them. Whenever I come into contact with a new person, I lean in hard and huff on their aura, and that tells me everything there is to know about that person. If I'm on the subway, I'll saunter up to the guy next to me in that sauntering way I have and rest my forehead in the crook of his neck and perform a sustained inhalation, what yogis refer to as a paraka, long and broad. It's akin to freebasing a thundercloud. And just like that, boom, I know everything about that person. I could tell you what apps are on his phone and what he thinks of Korean pop music, how he likes his tofu, how he got a sweet job doing almost nothing all day but posting Yelp reviews of mid-century French philosophers. But it's a curse as well. For it's so easy for me to know a person in this way that I sometimes get mixed up. I'll be in a movie theater, resting my chin on the cushion of the seat in front of me, casually grazing on the aura of a stranger, and I'll suddenly suck up trace amounts of the 8-year-old Vietnamese girl who made the shirt they're wearing, and I get confused. But in a good way. Like when you get a baby high. I mean, really high. Sometimes, if I'm lucky, I'll tap into a wild ancestral bloom of great aunts and grandparents and hot cousins, and I'll just jam out for hours. As you can probably tell, I've been breathing you in this whole time. I'm getting wafts of this sweet, nutty blush flowing from your heart center, and I'm not even sitting that close to you, but you're coming in strong and solid. I can see the kernel of your soul in my mind's eye like a gecko sees its tears. So pure, so clear. I'm standing in the stream of your consciousness wearing nothing but a bath towel, and I'm slurping the blue rays of your soul with my every pore. I'm about to get so drunk on your aura that I might go into a coma, which would be bad for you because if I lose consciousness with your aura still inside me, you'll be stuck there, hanging out in my useless body until the doctors are shrunk down and injected into me. Like that movie from the 60s that seems so silly now. I'm actually starting to black out. It's too late to turn back. I'm David Cross, and you're listening to the sound of me rippling through your dearest thoughts and memories live, in real time, on The Organist, the official podcast of The Believer.
How to cope with life's big challenges and mysteries is not the only thing that Americans are seeking these days. They're also looking for ways to maximize productivity and efficiency. Are life hacking apps the answer? Word of Mouth continues with a closer look at this 21st century craze and its roots in the industrial era. Stay with us.